Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 80, with Sarah Kornack and Bethann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Maggie Patterson. Maggie is a marketing expert who does marketing consulting. She also is the host of the Marketing Moxie podcast. What I love about Maggie is that she's able to give marketing advice that is actually practical to the small business owner. She's not just about marketing theory. She knows how to put things into practice and explain things to the small business owner. She has some great tips for us on the show today, and I know you're going to love her high energy, really fun personality as well. So let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we're chatting with Maggie Patterson. She's a copywriter and communications strategist. What she does is work hands-on with entrepreneurs to help them market their businesses. She helps them with content and just really nailing down the right communication strategy, along with writing those sales pages, figuring out the copy that's really going to convert your visitors into customers. She has 15 years of hands-on experience, and she's worked with companies of all sizes, from big brands all the way down to solopreneurs. So she cut her teeth during the dot-com bubble and bust in Canada's leading PR agency, but she then started her own highly successful marketing and communications consultancy. Maggie is the host of the Marketing Moxie podcast. Her work's been published on many leading websites such as the Huffington Post and Duct Tape Marketing. And most importantly, Maggie's the wife of the local volunteer fire chief, and she's the mom of a 10-year-old Lego King. Maggie loves to travel, her half-acre outdoor oasis in the middle of nowhere in Canada, and reading, paper crafts, and too many other things to possibly list. So welcome to the show, Maggie.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really, really excited.
Maggie, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your family, and then about your business?
I would love to. So I'm the mom to a 10-year-old Lego King. So 10-year-old boy, almost 11. He's just a normal kid. And we have a very unexciting, boring day-to-day life, which is how we like it here. My husband actually works shift work, so that's always a bit of a challenge from the parenting, work, scheduling, traveling schedule that we all keep up. But, you know, we just like to keep things really simple in our lives. We keep things quiet, mellow, calm as much as possible, which is not too hard because we live in a really small town outside of Canada's capital city, Ottawa, and there's not much going on here. So it's easy to keep things really tame and low-key. And then,
sounds nice.
Yeah, it's great. We really, really love it. Although right now with the snow, not as much. And so when I had my son, I decided I basically wasn't going to go back to my really cushy, comfortable, well-paying job because of travel. And I wanted to do something else. And I basically, just never came back from maternity leave because we have a year-long maternity leave in Canada, and I decided to start my own business. I had no clients. I had no plan, really, but I just pulled the ripcord and jumped, and almost 10 years later, I'm still here. Good news, and it's worked out really, really well. It's been a good choice for our family. It's been really good for me in terms of personal development, just doing the type of work I enjoy, and, you know, it does help support our family. I'm not going to lie.
That's wonderful. I love how you took that jump. And can you talk a little bit more about that first year branching off on your own? I know you actually hit six figures in your first full year with your own business, and you didn't even have your own website till 2013, which I thought was amazing. So can you share with our listeners a little bit more about how did you do it? What were those strategies for getting new clients and building up that reputation?
The one thing I will always say that was really, really smart, when I went into my communications career, I went into a consulting environment in a PR firm. So it didn't just set me up for the professional skills I needed in terms of copywriting and public relations. It set me up in terms of understanding budgeting, sales, account management. I mean, at the time I left that agency, I was managing multi-million dollar budgets, large teams. So going out and having to do those things for myself was not as scary. So one of the things I always tell people is if the business side of the business is not natural to you, make sure you get some experience doing that, because it's really hard otherwise to take what you're doing and learn all the ins and outs, like how do I market? How do I do this? Who do I do that? And a lot of it we have to do ourselves when we started out. So at least I had that part under control. And honestly, the best thing was for me is literally just letting everyone within my professional network know what I was doing. Like, I would send emails and just say, hey, just wanted to let you know I've left and this is what I'm doing, if you know anyone. And that is entirely how my business was built in that first year. I exceeded every expectation I had. I'm still in disbelief. Like, in a lot of ways, I just got really, really lucky. I had a couple really solid, financially stable clients from the get-go. And from there, people were able to say, hey, if you don't want to work with an agency within that community, they were like, Meg is the person you're going to go to, who's really going to become that part of your team and help you get this part of your marketing done. So fast forward 8 years later, I decided I was going to change that up a little bit, stop working as much with corporate clients. Being in marketing, I knew I needed a website, because most of my business was word of mouth or people finding me through professional contacts on LinkedIn. So I think it's really important to understand that when you're starting out, everything doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to have a shiny website. You don't have to have all of the things. Sometimes starting really simply is the best way to go.
Well, clearly you were delivering a fantastic product if your entire business was based off of referrals and, hey, go to Maggie. She knows what she's doing. So that's awesome that your work was such high quality. So what does communications consulting really look like? When you're working with a company or an entrepreneur, what does that involve?
So I wish I had a really good answer to this. Every single one of my clients, we're doing something a little bit different, but it always comes down to three core things. Number one is story. So we really work on the messaging, the story, the positioning of your business, because if you don't have that, you don't really have a good solid foundation for the rest of your marketing. You don't know what you're going to say on social media. You don't know what, you know, to put on your sales page. So once we get that part nailed down, then we really craft a plan for them where we make sure they have really good content, whether it be website content, sales copy, blog post, even if they're doing a podcast, what kind of things do you talk in podcasts? How do we plan that kind of content? How are we going to promote it? And then everything else we do is really about putting yourself out into the world. Are you going to speak? Are you going to guest post? What type of things do you actually really feel drawn to do? And the biggest thing I think I do overall with all my clients is I really just help them strip away all the shoulds. We find the things that they actually want to do and that are going to work for their business. Because if you try to do all of the marketing things, you will go insane, because it is a full-time job in and of itself.
That's a great point. I think I've definitely driven myself insane a time or two. So with this notion of storytelling, which I agree with, that that's so important for a company or an individual to tell that story. Can you talk to us more about telling a story in a meaningful way and just the advice that you have for an entrepreneur who might be struggling to tell that compelling story about their brand?
I could talk about storytelling all day long, so I'm glad we're talking about this. It really comes down to two points for storytelling. So the first thing is understanding why storytelling works. And really, there's just a whole scientific study around it. But at the most basic level, it comes down to storytelling is connecting with your audience in an emotional way. And we activate more parts of the brain when we do that. So instead of trying to have a conversation or engage someone all with logic and facts, where only a couple parts of their brains are activated. Using a story makes people pay attention. We know it. As humans, it's a pattern we learn. We learn shapes, we learn colors, we learn alphabet, we learn how to receive stories. So when you use those in your marketing, it's much easier to communicate with people. But when you actually sit, you know, this is all well and good, but when you sit down to figure out, well, what is the story? One of the things I always encourage people to really think about in their storytelling is it's not your story, like the story of how I quit my job or the story of the challenges I had with my children. So I decided to do a business working with moms or whatever it is. Really, the story is, what is the story your customers need to connect with you? So that may be for different types of businesses. That may be a story about how you deliver your customers' results or how you understand where they're coming from. Communicating in a way that says, hey, I'm a little bit different in the market and this is what I believe for. I think the idea of story, we always think our personal story and we get so stuck on us. You know, you need to stop and say, hey, what's in it for them? How is this story serving my people?
So you kind of identified the pain points that your customers might be having and then make sure all of your communications are telling the story of how you're going to meet that need. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's probably the easiest thing is if you don't understand your customers, it's really hard to come up with a story. And we all like to talk about ourselves. And if we can just kind of take pause and say, hey, what is my customer thinking, feeling, sensing at this time? How can I find a story that's going to help them connect with me around that versus trying to tell them the epic life journey like it's a Star Wars movie to them? Like, it's too much. People don't care that much about us until they get to know, like, and trust us.
So I assume that you do want your client stories to be an authentic version. I know I saw on your blog you hated the word
it's okay. The problem is there's no other word that conveys the same idea. We totally use it.
So anyway, I assume that you're trying to encourage your clients to tell the authentic version of the story, but frame it in a way that solves the customer's dilemma and not tell a story that is untrue to themselves, false.
And honestly, here's the thing is you could tell that story, but A, it's unethical, and B, people know, like, they just have this innate sense. They can smell it. It's sounds too good to be true, or it's just too much, and they're like, I'm not buying that. There's something off here.
Definitely. That's a good point. There are a few blogs I've seen where it's almost like they're trying too hard to be a certain way, or you definitely sense that. So going along the storytelling vein, I know you're also a big proponent of sharing customer stories of businesses doing that. So can you maybe give some examples of how an entrepreneur could use those customer stories?
So if you go onto any entrepreneur's website, if you're an entrepreneur yourself, you probably have a praise page, a testimonials page. And a lot of times we think that's enough and it's not. So I like to really focus on what I call, turning your customer into the hero. So what are the ways that you can start to inject that kind of human angle of your customers beyond just that? So it could be, depending on the type of work you do, case studies demonstrating the before and after. Like, think of, I always tell people, think of weight loss stories and how exciting those are. I lost 100 pounds and there's a picture of them before and the picture of them, after. What's the before and after for your clients? How can you demonstrate that? Use your customers as examples in your blog posts, your podcast, whatever it is. I just wrote a new autoresponder sequence, so just a series of emails people get when they subscribe to my list. And I included a couple customer stories in that about work we'd done on storytelling, examples of challenges they were having with some of their storytelling, and just really, I don't want to be too personal, and all the different things. And people can see themselves in people like them. So think of who in your client base is most like the people you want to attract, and really highlight those people, because let's face it, your customers are going to love that because it's giving them, you're showcasing them and their success, and you're also just making them look good. More people are going to know about them if you're sharing their message.
I like that idea. It helps you because you're illustrating what you can do or your product, but then it does help the people you've already helped. So that sounds like a great idea.
It's a win-win. And I think a lot of people think, oh, I don't want to ask my clients for that. Anytime I ask my clients for that, they're thrilled. They're like, and what else can we do?
I also saw that you talk a lot about writing copy that converts. Could you explain what that means and how small business owners can accomplish that?
So the easiest way to think of conversion, conversion is like this entire art and science in and of itself. But when it comes to your website, you want to think about, from your client's perspective, what's going to move them from visiting your site to engaging with you. So you need to be able to set a goal. And the perfect example is if you've ever been on a website, you get there and you think, oh, this is really, really pretty. But then you kind of stumble around. It's like showing up at college orientation week and not knowing where your dorm is. So you need to tell people where you want them to go in a nice way, of course. Direct them, orient them to your universe. So on a homepage, for example, having too many places for people to click creates this friction and too many decisions. What happens? You give your kids too many decisions for dinner. They don't pick anything. It's the same with your website. Don't give them too many options. It's like, you can have pizza or we can have nachos. That's it. So think of that on your homepage in terms of you can subscribe to my email list or you're going to see my services. There's not, you know, once you get into like 4, 5, 6 choices, people are just clicking away. They're like, I don't know what to do with that. Decision fatigue, you know, we all make so many decisions all day long. So if you're introducing that decision fatigue to your visitor, they're not going to stick it out with you, especially on the first visit. And then after you kind of think about your homepage, really think about every single page on your website, your about page, you know, your services page, what's the goal? If you're a coach, do you want them to be booking a consult or do you want them to be booking a service? Really think about like that journey of how they're going to go through your website and go from getting to know you, growing to like you, trusting you, and purchasing from you. And I think if you always think about those things, you can really simplify a lot of what you're doing.
Does that concept also apply to a mommy blogger who blogs about her kids and the recipes? Is there a way to apply that same concept to that type of website?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's going to come down to, okay, so if you're a mom blogger, what's your goal? Maybe your goal is more, let's say you've got really good traffic, but you want to have people on your site longer. So maybe your goal for your blog post is going to be to engage them into another blog post or to sign up for your email list so they basically become part of your community and then you can start sharing sponsor offers or whatever it is. So think about that goal. So maybe your goal is to work with your sponsors. Maybe it's to get more people on your email list and really apply that goal to your blog post. I mean, a perfect example is making sure at least on some of your blog posts you have a way for people to subscribe at the end of it. There's so many, especially if you're on a WordPress blog, there's so many different tools where you can set up a box for people to enter your email. Because if they come to your site once, you want to try to get them on your email list in a tasteful way, of course. But people are busy, especially moms. They might think, oh, I'd like to go back to that website, but I have no idea what the address was. Oh, well, that's about as deep as it goes. Whereas if you have them on the email list and they get an email from you next week, they're going to go back and read the next blog post.
True. Very true. And so then maybe for a product-based business website, maybe that copy that converts would be buying additional products or even in the same case, getting on that email list or newsletter list.
Exactly. I mean, I think that one goal for the majority of websites is always that email list. We focus so much on building up our social followers that we forget when we're doing that. Like every Facebook fan, every Twitter follower, we don't own those platforms, whereas we do own our emails. So if you're going to put energy and time into trying to build a tribe, build it on your email list because you own it. And ultimately, no one can take that away from you.
Great advice. Can you talk to us a little bit about getting published on leading websites such as the Huffington Post or Duct Tape Marketing? Do you have any tips for others who are wanting to get published on a large site like that?
So the best advice I have is start blogging on your own blog really, really consistently and start to see, you know, get comfortable with structuring, formatting, writing in that way. And then from there, I always like to think of guest blog posting as kind of like a staircase. So maybe you're going to first guest post on a really good friend's blog. And then you're going to find, let's say, a niche blog that you're going to go focus on. Sorry, this should be niche for my American friends. then you're going to focus on that. And then, you know, once you've got a little more experience under your belt, hey, now I'm going to turn around and pitch an idea to the Huffington Post. And that really does two things. Number one, it builds your confidence in the process because when you're starting out with guest posting, it is super, super nerve-wracking trying to figure out what to submit, how to do it. You know, make your mistakes early on with things that don't matter as much. Your business bestie isn't going to be upset with you if you botch something. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, too, when you go to turn around to pitch those bigger places, I mean, a great example is I have a client, we're pitching Duct Tape Marketing for her right now. The first question they came back with was, hey, can I see writing samples? So if you have proof of having been on other sites, that's really going to help your case too. And honestly, the simplest thing to do if you're really just starting out with guest posting is take some time, research the publications, see if they have guest posts, look through the contact us, the about us sections on the website, get familiar with what they write, and really follow their instructions. Some of them are going to want a completed post. Some of them are going to want an email with your idea outlined. So communicate with the media in the way they ask to be communicated with, because I can guarantee you 80% of people aren't doing that, and you will stand out by just following the rules.
That's a great point, and I think you're so right on that, because, you know, these big sites they're busy. They're getting submissions all the time, so you need to make it as easy as possible for them to say yes to you, because you've got all your ducks in a row, you've done everything they asked, and then, you know, hopefully if you blow them out of the water, then you'll get more chances to write for them.
Yeah, and I always tell my clients, like, look for the theme or the topic that they're kind of writing about, but they haven't touched your part of it. So when I was first started doing a lot of guest posting for myself, I noticed that people weren't talking about how crappy press releases were. So I decided that I should be the voice of all the other things you could do instead of a press release in the year 2014, because for heaven's sake, right, why are we using something that was invented in 1900?
That is a good point.
So, you know, I think take some time and really do some research so that your pitch connects with what their audience needs and then what's going to best serve your business.
So what do you say people should do instead of bothering with press releases?
So it all comes down to the goal. So I honestly feel really, I mean, and this comes from 15 years of doing press releases. So, you know, this is founded on fact, not just opinion. If you go back and really look at what the goal of the press release is, the goal in a lot of cases is to connect with media. Media aren't going to sit and read through press releases that have come through a third-party service you've paid for. They just don't. If you are small company XYZ or a mom blogger or, you know, solopreneur, they're not going to pick it up and go, oh, awesome, they just released the thing. They don't know who you are, and they don't care. You're going in the file under G, garbage. So if you actually want to try to connect with them, let's say it's your local media or whatever, you know, start by building a relationship. Connect with them on Twitter. Follow them. Share their stuff. From there, maybe you're going to send a quick email saying, hey, I noticed you write a lot on this. If you ever need a source, I'd be happy to help you. And then by the time you get there to say, hey, I have this really cool thing, and answer the question, what's in it for them, what's in it for their viewers, then you're going to be a lot further along. I think a lot of times we assume people are as excited as we are, and they're not. I hate to be the voice of reason and crush everyone's hopes and dreams, but they're just not. The thing we think is the best thing since sliced bread, they don't care about. We need to make them trust us, and then maybe they'll care a little bit more.
I like that. I think it's very true that we definitely view our stuff as so much better, cooler, awesomer than everybody else's stuff. And we think that way more people are going to care about what we're doing or what we're putting out or our product or service. And like, if you build it, they will come sort of idea. And that often isn't really the case at all.
Here's the thing with a press release. A press release is designed for news. So I'll give you an example I saw the other day, because someone in my community sent it to me and said, I know you love this. This poor misguided individual that I just want to like scoop up and save them from themselves, they issued a press release about their new Facebook page.
Oh,
that's not worthy. No, I feel so bad. Like, I just want to write them an email and be like, let me help you. But I can't help everyone. So, you know, really think about, like, is this actual news? Like, is this hard-hitting journalism? No? Okay. We can step back here.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, I would say, too, when I think about a press release, I think about a legitimate technological advance, or, you know what I mean, something along those lines that is truly newsworthy, or, you know, curing a disease or something along those lines.
Yeah, but the new line of flip-flops is here is not news.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but it's not news.
Yeah. So, Maggie, do you have any favorite tools or programs that you use on a regular basis that are just your go-to resources for your business?
Me and my team, we're really, really heavy Basecamp users. We love Basecamp. I think it's worth every single penny we pay for it for our project management. We also use it with our clients when we're working on bigger projects to cut down, like we literally manage all the files, cut down the email traffic around everything. And with a project management tool, I always tell people, like, everyone's brain works differently. So there's lots of different free tools, paid tools. So if you're just kind of dipping your toe in the water of that, take some time to figure out what's going to work for you. And then as a team, we are like heavy, heavy, heavy Google users, Google Drive, Google Mail, Google everything, because it is just so easy to edit, share, files are centralized. We don't have any issues with version control or anything.
That's a great point, Maggie, with using Google Drive for your documents, because I think, you know, Sarah and I have seen this just in, you know, drafts on WordPress or other places, or even with our Dropbox not updating, you know, in real time, like not updating fast enough. But Google Drive is really excellent for that.
And I think, you know, the one thing with Google, if you're going to switch to it, is it's a little nerve wracking in the beginning, especially if you come from a background where you've been using Office really, really heavily like I had. I was just not convinced, but I was like, all right, we're going to do this. And I mean, it honestly changed my business. We were so much more productive because we're not dealing with just crashes and lost documents and crazy things that happen in an average day.
Maggie, you've shared a lot of great advice about how others can grow their business. What would you say is one of the best ways that you have grown your own business?
From probably the very first day, I think the biggest thing is I always remember my business is about people. You know, list numbers, social media numbers, all those things are every single person in my audience, in my community, that's a person, a blog reader, a commenter, whoever it is. And I try to treat them that way as much as possible, trying to interact with people. I mean, if people are going to comment on my blog, I don't always do it, but as much as possible, I try to interact with them. If someone wants to ask me questions before they're going to purchase the service, I get on the phone with them. I think that in our really, really super connected world, and I'm running an online business, it's easy to forget that and just kind of start to have this mentality that, you know, people are PayPal accounts or ATMs, and they're not. They're people, like, they're investing their money. They need to be nurtured, respected, and cared for. And once you're in my client community and you've engaged with me, I want to treat you well and, you know, send you cards and gifts and really make sure that I deliver the goods.
I love that advice. I think that message is lost in the online space a lot of times. And I think too, you know, for many of our listeners, even just with trying to grow an Etsy shop or something along those lines, that quality of just really appreciating your customers and having, turning them into repeat customers and customers for life really is an excellent way to grow and maintain a business.
Yeah, I mean, for Etsy, honestly, things like, you know, a really great simple tag, how you package the product. I bought a couple pairs of earrings from a company here in Canada called Simple Studs last week. And the way they came packaged, the little details of the packaging meant I took pictures of them. I shared them on Facebook, because I wanted my friends to see how awesome this company was. I then also shared it with a group of my customers saying, if you need client gifts, I think this is a great thing because it comes so beautifully packaged. So great product, great packaging, good service. I'm now going to be a loyal customer. And I turned around and bought 8 pairs to send to clients.
That's awesome. Okay, what was that Etsy shop one more time?
I don't actually think they're on Etsy. They have their own site, but it's a company called SimpleStuds.com. But I think anytime you're selling handmade stuff, you're a maker. I'm passionate about paper crafting and have been for a really long time. So, you know, using those little extra tools that you have at your disposal when you're creative really help you stand out.
Is there anything that us Americans should know about doing business with Canadians or with a Canadian business or vice versa? Is there something that we don't know in our little world that would be helpful?
Well, one thing you could know right now is if you're doing business, say, with like a graphic designer in Canada, if they have Canadian rates, you're actually getting a bargain because our dollar right now is very low.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
But a lot of Canadian business owners, we run our businesses in U.S. currency just because it's easier than trying to have people go, what? Canadian dollars? Is that even real money?
Oh, no.
It's true. I mean, I do run my business in American dollars. It's pretty seamless. Like, I think the only thing is if you have clients in Canada, like, just be prepared for some serious postal rate shock at the post office if you're going to send anything, because our postal rates are a little bananas.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have a friend who lives in Michigan, and we send stuff to each other all the time, and she's always like, why is it so expensive? It takes like 4 weeks.
Oh.
It's a 10-hour drive, Maggie. I'm like, I'm pretty sure it goes to California and then back to Ontario.
That's good to know.
Well, I know that's a common complaint of people running Etsy shops, right? If they're going to deal with Canadians, they have to factor that into their costing and, quote, shipping rates. But Canadians are used to high shipping rates, so don't let that scare you off. Still do business with us lovely Canadians and our love of maple syrup.
I'm curious, do people in the U.S., this is another off-the-wall question, like, do Canadians get annoyed with people in the U.S. for, I don't know, just different faux pas that we commit against Canadians that we don't realize?
Oh, we're making fun of how we say A all the time.
Oh, that's cute.
I make fun of it all the time. I think I make fun of it on my website because it's just a fact. I do say A. I don't know why I'm doing it. It's no different than I have friends from the South who say, uh-huh. It's a regional difference. And I don't have an accent. Don't tell a Canadian we have an accent. We don't have accents here.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'll keep that in mind.
I know. Well, because I was about to comment. I haven't heard you say A at all, but I like the way you say about.
Yes, about.
About.
I can't help it. I don't even know I'm doing it. And here's actually another thing if you're doing business with lots of Canadians. Not every Canadian loves hockey. It's not, like, required.
That's a good point, you know, because I feel like that's almost the same as assuming everyone in the U.S. loves football or American football, you know, and it's like, I don't care.
Yeah, there's no sports in our house. We're doing Lego and Minecraft and Xbox, and that's what those boys in my house are doing. Yeah, and, you know, one thing to always remember with Canadians, 90% of Canadians live within 100 miles of the border. So Canada and America.
90%?
Yeah, 90%. If you actually look at, like, geographic distribution, most people live very close to the U.S. border.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
I live 30 minutes from the U.S. border. I just blew your minds a little bit, I know.
Did. You blew my mind.
It's true. So that's really interesting because, you know, if you think about the U.S., many of us are nowhere near the Canadian border. So it might explain why you guys have a little more cultural understanding than we do.
And to think of how spacious Canada is, too, and to think, I mean, it's ginormous how big Canada is. I mean, you must have so much untouched wilderness, which is pretty cool to think about.
Yeah, we always laugh when we drive, like, in northern Ontario and New Brunswick, and, you know, people talk about deforestation. And, I mean, it's a very real thing, not to make light of it. But my husband and I will be driving along, we're like, who lives here? Rocks and trees, more rocks and trees. Like, you can drive for hours, just rocks and trees. Like, good thing we're going camping, so we'll be seeing some rocks and trees.
Well, Maggie, thank you so much for chatting with us today. We've learned a ton, and it's great to hear from someone who has so much experience in communications and marketing. We always like to end with either a funny or cute mom moment, although I know your son's 10, so I'm thinking maybe funny might be more like it. Do you have anything like that you can share?
Well, this is actually podcasting related. So I listen to a lot of podcasts in the car, and I have for a really long time, as long as the language is suitable. And my son is in the back seat, and we're at the point now where he imitates all the introductions. So he'll say, oh, this is so-and-so on the so-and-so show. And, like, it's very comical. I think I can make money by selling these if I want to start another business, because he literally just... he can't stop himself, and he does it in, like, their voice with their accent. Like, it's so funny. It is also really disturbing. If that child does not become an entrepreneur, it's not because I didn't try.
That is too funny. So,
which one does he do the best impression of?
Entrepreneur on fire. It's pretty funny. I've told John Lee Dumas, like, and he's like, really? I'm like, yeah. He's like, that's a little disturbing, man. I'm like, I know.
Yeah, you need to record it and send him the video.
That'd be great if they took his voice, like, so he did his impression, recorded it, sent it to, like, John Lee Dumas, if you know him, apparently. And then instead of the normal introduction, he used your son's introduction on one of his episodes.
You know, I have to say, like, I did do an interview with him probably about a year ago, and he actually gave a full shout out to my son, saying like, "Hey, way to be in one of the next generation entrepreneurs." Like, super good, cool, gracious guy.
That's fun. Well, where can all of our listeners find you, Maggie? You're in a couple of different spots, I know, with your podcast and your website.
So if you would like more kind of marketing chat, like what I talked about today, I interview a lot of different people, from copywriters to coaches to all kinds of people doing cool things in marketing, over on the Marketing Moxie show. And you can just Marketing Moxie on iTunes and I'll pop right up. Everything else I do is living on my digital home over at maggiepatterson.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. We had a lot of fun and learned a lot.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And everyone, thank you for listening to our long conversation about all kinds of various things. We packed a lot in here.
That was so much fun talking with Maggie today. And I definitely walked away with some great practical tips. Plus, I learned a lot of fun stuff about Canada. If you're looking for the show notes, head on over to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/80. And you'll find links to Maggie's website there and information about all the topics that we covered today. I hope you're having a wonderful day. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.